The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody. It's time for Need to Know. Kip Kiefer with you, as per usual. Another week and a lot going on. And I'm sure that you probably suspected that where I was going to go with this week's edition is the really bad week that our fearless leaders had in Washington as they continue to find more and more classified documents in his house. In Wilmington, Delaware, I think this latest batch he was using for stuffing in his pillowcases for taking a naps on the couch during his frequent visits to Delaware. And of course, also in the, this was my favorite line of the week, in the Biden Center think tank in Washington, which was pretty much funded by, completely funded, it's the Penn Biden think tank center, and they found a bunch of classified documents in there. Of course, isn't it interesting that the funding for that came from University of Pennsylvania after getting about a $60 million odd grant from Communist Party of China? So, you know, there's a lot of things going on there, but I'm going to let that story develop before I really weigh in and give you thoughts. My one thing I'll leave you with before I get to today's subject is, there was an old show back in the 60s. You may have seen reruns. I think it still surfaces every once in a while. It was called Petticoat Junction. And of course, it was the story of the main character, Kate, and her three daughters and her Uncle Joe, who was elderly at the time, played by Edgar Buchanan. And the premise was they ran a little hotel right on the rail line somewhere in upstate New York called the Shady Rest. And the theme song to that show, I really think I've got a genius idea of trying to cut maybe a fun little video using Uncle Joe, Edgar Buchanan, who was basically elderly and not very inspired to do anything. The theme of the show, the jingle that brought the show in toward the end, showed a picture of Uncle Joe taking a snooze on the porch. And it just reminds me so much of our fearless leader right now. And the song went, "And that's Uncle Joe, he's moving kind of slow at the junction." And it's Petticoat Junction. But I think we just modify that a little bit. Our president's Uncle Joe, he's moving kind of slow at the junction. White House Junction. Anyway, that's my thought on that. We'll get to it on future episodes. Today, I have a duty to perform, and I'm going to let all of you in on it exclusively, listeners to Need to Know. The Davos, Switzerland conference of the super elites, the World Economic Forum, took place last week, and I have a strong address, a speech, if you will, to deliver to that group today, and that's going to be the premise here on Need to Know. So let's get to it. I have a penchant and a passion for public speaking, and I thought this was a great opportunity to deliver a very powerful message to those particular individuals. So here we go. I'd like to thank everyone for the opportunity to address this group. My name is Kip Kiefer. I am not a ancestral royal or European blue blood or major captain of industry or giant corporate rich fat cat. I am just a regular guy living in America. In other words, AKA the person that you collectively loathe and really yearn to restore previous order and have my subservience, my obedience, and my compliance with all of the things that you elites, the people that have for many centuries fancied themselves as the anointed ones, the ones that are superior intellectually and morally and virtually over people like me. I am not in attendance. I was not invited to the conference, so I'm really delighted to have a chance to address you all. So I did not fly in on one of the 1,000 private jets that are currently parked or were parked at the Zurich airport. That's about 2 hours away from Davos, which is in the Swiss Alps. To get there after flying in on your private jet, you have to either jump in a limousine or a luxury SUV for the 2.5 hour drive up into the mountains, or for the super affluent, all you have to do is commission a helicopter, which will be happy to drop you off right there at the resort site. This is an annual gathering. I'm so excited that all of you have a chance once again to convene and initiate a think tank of all of the things that you need to do to be responsible citizens of the world and do what's right on behalf of all of its inhabitants. And if anybody thinks that's the mission of this conference, I have got some prime real estate just on the edge of the Everglades that I really am interested in showing you all at the conclusion of these remarks. So with all that being said, you know, there's officially 2,700 delegates to this convention. There were 1,000 approximately private jets that carried people from all over the world. However, the vast majority from Europe to the conference this year. I'm not a mathematician, but that works out to 2.7 passengers per jet. Not real efficient. That means that basically a lot of people flew here by themselves. And in a time when the major theme of the conference is now something we're going to discuss, that's an important point to remember of the simple dynamic of how everybody arrived at this venue. So let me backtrack and preface what I want to say by, again, mentioning the fact that this is a gathering of people predominantly from Europe who still harbor the lineage and the desire for the world to be restored to what they believe is the rightful order of things. And when I say that, I'm talking about in previous centuries, the European dominance of the entire globe was profound. Through colonization and imperialism, Europe expanded its influence all over the globe with exploration and really audacious and at that time, even somewhat laudable ambition to explore and develop the rest of the world. But that control, that influence is something that a lot of members and people in this room yearn for. And the predominant amount of delegates that are here come from that background, whether they have direct ancestral roots to royalty who ruled Europe for centuries. And when I say that, you think, well, we're talking about individual countries. No, we're talking about virtually the entire continent. Because if you don't know history, it will astound you to learn that many of these monarchies in all of these different countries that were Europe dating back to about the 1600s were only controlled by a select group of families that basically incestuously only reproduced within their own kind and produced a bloodline of folks that were not physically or even mentally fit for any kind of duty in terms of leadership and being the practical heads of anything. They were just the birthright of royalty. And that's why you had horrible problems with medical issues back in a certain era of people from these unions suffering from things, horrible things like hemophilia, which is basically bleeding that can't be stopped. That is one of the genetic repercussions for breeding a little too closely with cousins and other relatives, once again, to keep the bloodline pure. So not only are there descendants from that era here and those families who controlled a tremendous amount of the property and the wealth of all of these nations on the continent in Europe. There's also still remnants, because most of these folks, most of you, have castles and manors and seaside second homes and third homes, and still command vast amounts of wealth and property in modern day Europe. So welcome to all of you elites, royal descendants, and also the other blue bloods from that era of that several century old dominance are people that had to be enlisted to really make it work and do the actual work of organization and governing and policy. And a lot of those families also became tremendously enhanced in great fortunes by being the really henchmen for the royals that were dominating everything. And a lot of you and a lot of those traditional families and traditional money is here. And everything was right with the world while Europe was the cradle of civilization and in charge of everything. And then you started having unrest. Commoners rose up, their very nerve of such a thing. In France and in the colonies in the Americas, there was outright revolt, because finally, this whole system of autocracy and monarchy was just intolerable, and people yearn to be on their own devices and be free to do what they want and pursue what they dream of to achieve. So when all that unrest began, the initial reaction from the various crowns and from loyalists to the kingdom and the order of things was to do what General Cornwallis, the leader of the British forces in America in the Revolutionary War, began referring to the uprisers as, and that was commonly rabble. Now, think about the word rabble. I know you've heard it. You've probably never really considered what it means. Rabble is a derogatory term. And Cornwallis, for context, used to say to his adjutants and associates that we're going to have to deal with the rabble, you know, in this location, talking about a battle. Rabble is a term that was adopted in English language in the 15th or 16th century that referred to either swarms of insects or animals that were agitated or obstruction or some kind of problem, really referencing on the animal side, since there are not really swarms of particular animals that are imposing on humans, that had to have been a reference to mice and rats and maybe snakes and some other things. Insects, of course, is a lot more self-explanatory. But as time evolved, rabble extended to human beings that were standing up for themselves and causing heartburn for the establishment. And just to think about that word and what the revolutionary figures were accused of being, rabble, is really insulting but very eye-opening reference to what exactly their view of what was going on was. So with that being said, the rabble did revolt, and the rabble did overcome some of this structure, and there's been resentment for it for many, many hundreds of years. And descendants and people sitting in this room that yearn for those days of European dominance, still fancying themselves as the chosen ones, the anointed ones, the elite of our society, who know better than the commoner what is best for everyone. But really, that is just a sidebar, because what that really means is, just like we always talk about here, it is the ultimate opportunity for influence and seizure of power, control, and wealth. And that's what it always boils down to. And that's what this gathering, all of you here in Davos, are really here to discuss. The think tank is not to talk about what's good for the planet, what's good for its population, what's good for anyone other than yourselves, and how can we, once again, make our influence and dominance and basically control, power, and money increase to the ultimate extent. And that really is the underlying theme. Now, you had President Klaus Schwab, who founded this organization about 30 years ago, welcome you to the proceedings. Klaus Schwab stood up today or in his opening remarks and basically said the new theme for this organization is we wish to be the master of future. Master of future. Now, that's some interesting wordsmithing. Let's think about that for just a minute. What was he meaning by that? It could be interpreted, of course, as this group is responsible for making decisions for the responsible carrying on of Earth and its inhabitants. We need to master the future. But it also can be interpreted in what I think the true meaning is, that they want to be, you want to be, the master of the future. And basically, the word master is very uncomfortable when we're talking about people that assume themselves to be elite. And in America, for instance, the word master now is on that list of words you just don't say anymore, because there are associations with that word to a former era of course, slavery and bondage. And it is a word that is not popular in English language in the Americas now. In fact, there is a big movement even to get away from calling the primary bedroom in a house the master bedroom. It's one of those words that's on the list that is offensive and has connotations that should not allow the use any longer of that word. So the choice by the President Schwab, 74 years old, by the way, living here in Switzerland, a former college professor, which I know that'll shock everyone, that he could come from that background to lead an organization such as this, the World Economic Forum, again, consisting of elites, and also grudgingly allowing captains of industry and major corporate figures, big money folks, to be part of this collective every year. But that was very interesting verbiage, I thought, coming from President Schwab to kick things off. Of course, he is also known for some other major quotes in the last couple of years, and we'll get to those in just a minute. I do want to characterize what all of you do here at Davos in the context that is not talked about enough, because basically at this conference by day, this is a signal of virtue and decency and righteousness and talking about plotting a course that is best and really elevating yourselves as the ultimate thinkers and people that need to communicate as to what's best for Earth and its inhabitants. But by night, a big portion of the attendance in Davos for this conference every year is an estimated between 500 and 700 of the top end, highest skilled, highest paid sex workers in the country, in the country surrounding this area, primarily European once again. So by day, you're the signals of virtue and decency and righteousness. By night, it's drunken debauchery and depravity, unchecked and unimaginable. Basically, it is the rich, elite, old white men gone wild. Thankfully, I don't think there's going to be a video. Hopefully, we'll never have to be suffering through seeing anything like that. But it is the ultimate sign of hypocrisy and just disingenuousness. And also the other words that I just mentioned, really low down and inexplicable misbehavior by people that are casting themselves as these great leaders, but also taking advantage with all of their accompaniments and wealth, flying in on private jets and engaging in probably acts that a lot of us just can't even imagine. So the hypocrisy and the, you know, complete disqualification of any sign of virtue or decency is evident here as we talk about this meeting. And let's get back to the most loathed of all of the entities that you deal with, and that's the United States of America, who broke away and began the real collapse of what the world order was back in the days you yearn to return to. The United States, of course, it's ironic, is completely villainized and criticized and looked upon with great disdain by this group. But on the other hand, everybody's hand is out wanting the United States to fund all the activities that are going on and the protection of this continent through NATO for many years. The United States has provided the lion's share, the overwhelming majority of the funding. You want our money, you don't have any interest in our input. And the fact that the two visible delegates from the United States that are at the Davos event this year are two of the least exemplary Americans, two of the least respected Americans currently that we possibly have to offer, but they do fulfill one part of what you're looking for. As you talk about equity and justice, it's funny those terms are so commonly used. When the American delegates and speakers at this conference are John Kerry and Al Gore. Now, both of these guys were failed candidates in presidential elections. Thank God there was some wisdom from the American people at some points in our last 50 or 60 years. Both of these guys represent two of the biggest weasels and most disingenuous frauds that this country has ever produced. John Kerry is a self-proclaimed elitist. He carries himself that way. He speaks that way. He looks a lot more and sounds a lot more European than he does American. And he is just a shady character who has always sold out to the highest bidder. His current role is the special envoy for climate concerns. And that is a story in and of itself. But John Kerry also, always the opportunist, when Senator John Hines, the proprietor of the Hines Company, which was a worldwide, of course, major corporate power, died tragically in 1991 in a plane crash. It didn't take John Kerry long to scoop up Teresa Hines, John's widow, and marry her and really enhance his fortune at least tenfold, if not more. So John Kerry is a professional now at trotting around the world, living the high life, just like this week in Davos, no telling how many five-star resorts and what he indulges in his typical week. But John Kerry has made a cottage industry out of his current assignment, which is sounding the alarm that the planet is in terrible distress and everybody has to step up and sacrifice to save it. Well, not John Kerry. Meanwhile, Al Gore, cut out of the same cloth. This is a former senator from Tennessee, the son of Albert Gore Sr., who served in Washington for almost 40 years between Congress and the Senate. And Al Gore Sr. started off as being kind of a conservative Southern Democrat, and later in his life started to evolve into what the Democrat Party is now, which is a left-leaning, socialist, desirable system party that really wants to have central government in the line of what we talked about before as basically a European style monarchy to tell people what they should do, where they should go, what they should do for a living. Get rid of your cars and your fossil fuel consumption and all of the terrible habits that you're doing to destroy the planet, because don't do what we do, but do as we say, because we know best. Al Gore has gravitated from a senator from Tennessee and the former vice president to a failed presidential candidate who also embraced this climate change, this planet emergency culture, and became a big shooter in Hollywood, rubbing elbows with celebrities and living the glamorous life out in La La Land. He divorced his wife, Tipper, of 40 years, threw her under the bus, because she didn't fit his new image of being a Hollywood slick type who was out making documentary films. You might remember An Inconvenient Truth, which made all kinds of brash predictions back in 2007. John Kerry said, that's the other weasel. Al Gore said that by this time, all of the snow on Mount Kilimanjaro, one of the world's highest peaks, would be melted, that the polar ice cap would be almost totally diminished, that the oceans would have risen to the point where most of the East Coast, all of Florida and New York City would be underwater by now. Those were some of the alarmist things he said in 2007. I was in Miami recently. I looked around and I didn't see the water coming up onto the land. In this opening remarks of this conference, you heard John Kerry. You hear Al Gore say that the oceans are boiling. Well, I was again at the ocean recently. I put my feet in the water. It wasn't boiling. I was at the Pacific last year. It was downright cold. So I don't know what John Kerry is talking about. I don't know what Al Gore is talking about. They're talking about this emergency. In the last 140 years, the industrialization of the planet is threatening a planet that's been here and evolved millions of times in 4.5 billion years of its existence. And the reason that this was the theme at this conference and for this movement is because it's the ideal, perfect vehicle. Because what it does, it serves the purpose of having a call to arms for all citizens. The elites can demonstrate their angst and disgust and fear of what's happening and pass that on and sell it to the general public, you know, us, the rabble, the commoners, fear that the planet is being diminished and justification and really impetus for Americans and citizens around the world to start depriving themselves of comforts that they have in their lives, and worse, to start to put aside their own ambitions and dreams and just become compliant and obedient and acquiescent to what the elites and the brilliant people of the world are telling us to do, because the world is in jeopardy. These people, again, how perverse is it that a bunch of old white men, most of them 70 and older, John Kerry is 80, Al Gore is 74, our pal Klaus Schwab, the president of this outfit, is 74. These are guys that are in the later part of their lives. They don't give a happy you-know-what about the future because their time is winding down. How perverse is it that these people are pulling the strings and setting the tone through their efforts? George Soros is another great example, 93 years old and spilling money and pouring resources all over the world to lead to disarray and destruction. Because Klaus Schwab said during the COVID situation that maybe this is a good thing. The silver lining is, while it's tragic and a lot of people are dying, this may be the trigger for the Great Reset. The Great Reset, folks, is getting back to an orderly world where the super elites and the big money interests have all of the power and everybody else lives in this equitable, and equity is the key word. It's not equality that's the goal anymore, it's equity, which means that people at the bottom who are not producing and are not ambitious and are not pursuing anything basically are risen up, and the people that are super motivated and the achievers are drugged down to a level part where both of them are. And what that leads to is the people at the top who have all this ambition doing next to nothing because they give up. There's no point in being an achiever. And the people that are underachieving get risen up, which takes away any incentive they ever have to improve. And they just kind of ride merrily along. So that's the goal. If anyone thinks it's anything different, everybody in this room listening to these remarks, as far as you elites here in Davos, you know exactly that I've hit perfectly on what the real motivation of this conference, this think tank, and this annual visit of an excuse to get together for depravity, debauchery, and whatever else goes on here. That's the real story as far as the Davos conference is concerned. That's all my remarks for the day. I wish everyone well, and thank you for listening. I don't think I'm going to get a wild round of applause here, so I'm just going to wrap it up and wish all of my listeners here on Need to Know a very good week, and I would be interested to know what your comments and thoughts are after this little public tongue thrashing of people that I think are the most loathsome on the planet. I'm Kip Kiefer. We'll see you next week on Need to Know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.